Welcome to Records and Real Estate, a podcast about, well, records and real estate. You'll be entertained and informed as we explore the intersection of these two worlds through interviews with Chicago's most interesting and successful people from both industries.
That was Andrew Wendt, and I'm Karen Sanvoss. We are Chicago real estate brokers, property managers, avid music lovers, and your hosts of Records and Real Estate.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Andrew.
We just chatted with Josh Jones.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. It's just a veritable encyclopedia of knowledge about the mortgage industry.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, I've done a little bit of the buying and selling from the broker standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, real estate broker. Mm-hmm. And then there's this guy that does the loans. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of the guy that you call on the phone and they do all this stuff in the background. Mm-hmm. You have no idea really what's going on. And mm-hmm. they just call you and like, okay, we're ready to close. And right. Great.
Great. And, what just happened?
Yeah. And to hear sort of the, you know, pull the curtain back and see how the sausage is made. Uh-huh. It was fun. I would love to have him back and talk even more about this process.
We go on and on stories and learn about the process.
And some pitfalls. So if you're looking to buy a house, he'll show you some tips and tricks.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really good educational episode. We actually focused mostly on real estate this time around.
Yep.
Which is nice and refreshing. So
that's right. So we're going to call this episode Real Estate and Records.
Should we redo the logo too?
I think so. Just flip it around.
Just flip it.
180. Photoshop.
Anyway.
I'd say, want to start?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
Well, we're here with Josh Jones today. Thanks for joining us, Josh. Appreciate it.
I love that I'm here today.
Yeah. We're happy to have you. Josh and I are good buddies. Our wives know each other well. Well, you also know my wife. Well, you went to college with her.
Yes. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago. She was an Alpha Phi. I was a Theta Chi. And I was the house sweetheart of the Alpha Phis.
Okay.
And I got to know everyone. I got to eat over there. That was huge. They had a really nice air-conditioned house. Frat houses were sweat boxes at U of I. So
yeah. Better food over there?
Much better food. Much better cook.
Why did they have air conditioning and you didn't?
You know, they just had a really nice house. Their cook, a lot less cigarettes in their food than it was ours.
Wow.
So they had a really good Taco Tuesday. So I enjoyed that. And I spent a lot of time over there and I got to see people. I had one of the privileges where I was allowed to at least be upstairs.
Uh-huh.
I'd still have to be gone by like 10 at night.
Right.
Where non-house sweethearts had to leave by 9.
Right.
So it was like, I got an extra hour up there to hang out with now my wife.
Yeah.
Michelle, so it was really nice. But a lot of us became lifelong friends.
Nice. That's great. Really sweet. Yeah. That was a good group of people that we get to hang out with a lot. So, now that we have that introduction out of the way, we're here at Records and Real Estate. And Josh, we recently had a guest that stated that the Sam Cooke Live at Harlem Square Club was one of the best concert albums ever. And I know you're a Sam Cooke friend or a fan, I should say. You're not a friend.
I would be pretty old, but the way Sam Cooke passed, we will talk about that. So that is an interesting story.
I don't know that story.
I was not there, but
you've heard.
Yes.
Do you have that live concert in your album collection?
I have a lot of Sam Cooke albums. I love the 50s and 60s, but like Sam's music is some of the best music you can hear, like from like Chain Gang and a lot of those songs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the artists at that time would just cover his stuff.
Yeah.
And when you hear it, so like the albums I have are his greatest hits albums.
Uh-huh.
It's really hard to find those albums. Like you have to look hard. You got to pay a real pretty penny.
Right.
And sometimes you get those records and they're not in good shape either.
Right.
So sometimes you have to buy the reproductions.
Right.
And they're good though. But the music is just so good.
Nice. Tell us a little bit about your collection because, you know, I don't remember the entire story, but you have this old, beautiful sort of vinyl and stereo cabinet. that you had refurbished, I would say, right?
Yes. So I have this Montgomery Ward 19, I think we had it dated. It was about 1958 nice. To 1962 range. It has a record player, an 8-track, and it has this old radio in it. And so it sat in my grandfather's 3-flat in Berwyn, where he has lived since 1955.
Wow.
And so it was actually my mother's too, who okay. isn't with us anymore. But she bought it, but it was old at the time when she bought it.
Okay.
So like, he believes, he's like, I think we've had this since like the mid 60s. So like they bought an older version. It was hers. And so it sat there and it was just basically like everyone would throw all this junk on it.
Right, right, right.
Fast forward, it was 2015. He was selling his home.
Okay.
He was at that age. He's still alive now. He's 97.
Oh, wonderful.
And he's like, hey, I'm going to sell this. And I'm like, can I just have it? And he's like, it doesn't work. It hasn't worked in, you know, 30 years. So I kept it in a storage unit until I moved into my new house where I'm at now. And so I had this record player and I was like, I got to find a way to refinish it because it means a lot to me. It means a lot to the family.
Yeah.
So I found this company in New York. So I took this thing, I boxed it up. It cost me $700 to ship this to New York. And so they were 9 months behind, though. So it sat there for nine yeah. months. I completely forgot about it. It comes back. It's restored. It's beautiful. It works. Well, I thought it worked. As they were taking it off the truck, the guys like hit the side of their truck as they were taking it off. And when I plug it in, it's like this sound, which you heard that
yeah,
sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, Andy, you got to help me with this thing. So I was like, I can't ship it back to New York. They felt really, really bad. And so I managed to find a local guy here after calling all these vintage, I was calling vintage computer shops, radio shops, going on all these Facebook groups. And the guy came out, he came out to the house and he's like, oh, just got to put this wire back. He opened up the back and it was fixed.
Like, way.
So now this, and it is, it sounds like probably how it would have in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. Like it sounds, it's cool. And I love playing 50s and 60s records.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful piece of art, really.
I love it.
Certainly Americana. And do some of your records come from your grandpa and your mom or?
So I have from my other side of my family, I had a grandma who collected all these old records from like Jim Nabors, who was the Andy Griffith Show. Gomer Pyle was his name. So you have all that. Otis Redding, Ray Charles. And so I have a lot of old records like that. And then over the years, I just started trying to buy those older records. But it's really hard to find in good shape, right? These things are 50, 60, 70 years old.
Totally.
So a lot of the records I started to buy are just the reprint of them. And it helps because you don't know the quality of the records you are getting when you buy them out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of vinyl aficionados who want the originals, but a lot of them just want, you know, good sounding records.
And, yeah.
Just to hear the music.
No, I love it.
You know, from the years that we've gotten to know each other a bit, do you have a strong connection to family? Was that part of the impetus to have this cabinet refurbished? Was, you know, sort of keeping your family history alive a little bit?
I think that when it comes to pieces of furniture and people's family, right? Like to the outside world, it could be worth nothing or it could be worth a couple bucks, right? But to you, it's like, oh, if this is a connection to your mother who's no longer there, or this was the centerpiece to where people ate meals and dinners. Mm-hmm. And so like, to me, that piece of furniture is going to be worth well more than anyone that would ever pay me for it. Now there's no price I could ever part with it, because when you hear that, you could be like, oh my God, my, you know, grandfather, my grandmother, my mother was listening to this same record player at the same time. It's like the old saying that if you're looking at the moon and someone, you know, across the country is you guys are looking at the same moon. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. when you think like that, you're like, oh my God, they heard music out of these speakers the mm-hmm. way I'm hearing music. So mm-hmm. it's a really cool connection.
Nice. Love that.
What is the affiliation with you, or why are you so attracted to 50s and 60s?
I actually think a lot of it has to do with two things. One, my father. I grew up on oldies 104.3, if anyone mm-hmm. ever mm-hmm. ever remembered that.
That's Dick Biondi.
Oh,
Dick
yeah.
Biondi. Uh-huh. WJMK. Yeah. And so, like, listening to, like, Blueberry Hill and like, all these songs, Fats Domino at that time, and The Platters, and, like, it feels like my childhood. And the other thing is, like, I love the 50s where it was kind of the first birth of, like, it felt like the first birth of, like, capitalism and business and, like, the Cadillac and all these cars that was, like, just really cool. Mm-hmm. And so now it seems like we are kind of a throwaway culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so back then it's like you still have all these classic cars that exist from that time period where, like, it's just big, mm-hmm. beautiful pieces of work. The music was, it was the birth of, you know, R&B and pop music. It was coming out of the 30s and 40s, which was like country folk. Mm-hmm. And now you're coming into R&B and the blending of cultures. And it was just, it's like a really cool time. Mm-hmm. So I've always liked that.
That's cool. We have a book you should read from a previous guest, Mark Greeno, who wrote a book of the history of country music in Chicago. And really? it talks about that gap or that bridge that you're talking about of just country music,
yeah.
and how it led to kind of everything. And it was put on the map with Chicago and the yeah. radio stations.
That's cool.
I think he's actually the guest that posited that the Sam Cooke live album was the best live album.
Oh, see, swinging back.
Could be wrong about that.
Sam Cooke. All right. So
yeah.
the story on how Sam Cooke died, he died at the age of, I think, 33. Mm, so the story is, and this actually has to do with the time that it was, he was in L.A. Mm-hmm. and he was with a lady of the night uh-huh. in uh-huh. a hotel room who robbed him. Okay. And he was running out of the hotel room to chase her down. Uh-huh. And the hotel manager saw and thought he was attacking her due to the timing. And I think that was like 62-ish or yeah. something. Mm-hmm. But he was really young. He would have been like another Ray Charles, just like great music upon great, great music. But he was murdered and then it went to trial and it was deemed that the hotel manager was a justifiable homicide at the time. So, like, just someone cut down in his prime for just, but at that time, he still had like 30 number ones.
Right.
Like, wow. he would be crazy. Our, like, you know, Taylor Swift of, right. like, with that many number ones, right. Beyonce's. Like,
right.
It's crazy.
Wow.
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
That's sad. It's super sad. Yeah. That, and it just, wrong place, wrong time, so, and they thought
wrong era.
They thought he was attacking the woman, and
of course,
and he got killed.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, but his music lives on for sure.
That's true.
Yeah, what could he have done had he lived longer?
Oh my God! I mean, he would have had 100 hits. I mean, you have even from the same area, Neil Sedaka, right? Like mm-hmm. his music. If you Google his name and you play his stuff, you're going to know all of his music. Right. And he's still around today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sirius Radio, 50s Gold, Channel 72. So check it out. Yeah. And that's literally always on in my car, too.
Nice.
I love that era.
So speaking of families and connection to families, you and your wife have a foundation, the JM Foundation.
Yes.
Josh and Michelle Foundation.
That is, yes. The Josh and Michelle.
And tell us a little bit about that. What, cause you guys help out specific families each year, right?
Yeah. So back in 2009, we started the JM Foundation. It was kind of right after the housing crash happened and you started seeing people who were losing their homes. People really started having financial problems. And so we said, hey, you know, if there's something we can do to maybe help on the local level, right? We all have the Red Cross and all those other things. And so I said, hey, why don't we start a foundation? We don't really know how to start a foundation, but we know we want to help. And so the premise was to help people who fell in between. So there's a lot of Americans who, where they, you know, make just enough to get no benefits, but they make too much where they might not get, their kids might not get free lunch at school. Mm-hmm. They have rent. They have, you know, 2.2 cars, 2.2 kids. And they're just barely surviving. So we adopt 10 families around the holidays and we talk to the families. We work with local agencies to make sure we're getting qualified families, but everything is local within like a 10-mile radius mm-hmm. of Riverside, Brookfield area. Mm-hmm. And then we talk to the families. We say, hey, what do your kids need? And then we raise funds from people. Typically private donations. We've had some grade schools who did some concerts and benefits and they made large donations to us, which then we in turn, donate out. But, our job is if we can feed and clothe and give these families basic needs and goods, and we provide them for a couple months, mm-hmm. maybe we don't see them again. Maybe we get them through that hard part that they're going through. Mm-hmm. So we took the idea of the Christmas basket that people just drop off mm-hmm. and just kind of blew it up mm-hmm. and said, like, we're going to give you 100 Christmas baskets mm-hmm. and we're going to spend, you know, $1,000 per family around the holidays, get some kids that, you know, one nice present and get a bunch of food, paper towels, toiletries, you name it. Mm-hmm. We were doing it. So you guys have been part of that. A lot of people mm-hmm. have been a part of that. And we pack the food around the holidays. We go to these people's houses, we hug and kiss them, and it's just a great thing. Mm-hmm. So, wow. Yeah, this is now our 14th year, 18th year, yeah, 14 years. So, that's
great. So you look to other people to find these families. Is that how you,
how do you pick them? We have some local agencies who we work with. Our biggest one is CAEL, and so it's Chicago Area Alternative Education League.
Okay.
And so this league is ran by one of our good friends, Sarah Lorenzi. And so she works with a lot of local families and kind of, I don't want to say the troubled youth, but more of the, just kind of the kids who are fallen in between, like they're not doing well in the regular schools. So now they're with this program. And so a lot of their families need help. And so we get some of the families there. And then it started out, we would work with the local town hall, but we kind of realized the local town halls and the village halls just didn't know their families the way we thought they would. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we had to go and then we work with, and we also work with a guidance counselor at a special needs school too.
Nice.
And so with those two, we have plenty of people to, you know, choose from. We don't do the thing like, hey, can you help my friend? You know, mm-hmm. like we really want to make sure our money and other people's money is going to good use.
Right.
It's very important.
That's smart. I mean, it's a lot of work, I'm sure, in and of itself, but it would be more work if you had to track down the worthy recipients, you know.
That's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
And it used to be we would deliver to these families and some people would say, oh my God, did you see their flat screen TV? And I kind of used to feel like that too. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I realized if that one or two nice things makes them feel normal or okay,
right?
Who cares?
Right.
Because, you know, you can't even buy a lousy TV anymore. If you want a TV, it's going to be a flat screen TV. Mm-hmm. Right. It is what it is.
Right.
So like that's where just finding the good families, the people who really needed, you know, we had a lot of, we had two kids with cancer this year. And so we were able to do some nice things for them. So it was really great.
So you guys have, you know, an event, but if people wanted to make a donation to the foundation, they could, or?
Yes. Yes. So we have the jamfoundation.org. And then we also have Facebook, Instagram, the JM Foundation. You can go there and it has all of our information on there to donate. We are always accepting donations. Obviously, most of our money comes in around the holidays. And then we also have a big bingo event coming up in April, where we're going to have about 250 people. We nice. Play bingo, prizes, cash bar, and that's going to be at Ashiana Banquet Halls in, I want to say that's Lombard, but okay. our good buddy owns that place, so we're going to be doing it over there.
That's
so.
Really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Do you get to follow up with the families, or what happens after that? After you drop off the baskets?
There are some families we make lifelong connections with. So, like, there is one of the families ended up, I really took a liking to one of the older sons who wanted to be in business. Mm-hmm. So I had him intern with me for a couple years, and then he went off to college at Milliken, which was really, really great. Nice. He's the first person in his family to do that.
Nice.
And then we've had other families who we've stayed in touch with where they send us progress reports. And then sometimes during the year, like, hey, my son wants to play this, or my daughter wants to do dance. It's $350. Do you know anyone? And so we'll kind of come together and say, like, we're going to pay for that because we don't want your children missing out on experiences just for money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's something to enrich them.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then there's some families we wish we like knew what happened to them, but they just kind of moved out of the area and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe they're okay.
Yeah. And maybe they're okay.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Nice.
Very cool.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit, not a little bit, maybe a lot of it, and talk about mortgages. Do you know anything about mortgages?
I might know a thing or two about mortgages.
How long have you been doing mortgages?
So this is my 19th year. I started when I was 22 years old.
Wow.
I'm 41 now. It's the only kind of real job that I've ever known. I didn't really know anything about mortgages except that if you wanted to start a business, you wanted to buy a house, you wanted to kind of grow wealth, you needed a loan. And so I figured, like, you know, real estate, I read in college, like, it's a big part of the economy. So, you know, that's kind of how I got into it. I started out as an assistant for a couple loan officers who did some mortgages, and one was really mean, but he took control of the deal. And the other one was kind of just chill, relaxing, probably enjoyed marijuana a little too much. And his clients loved him, too. So I was like, all right, let's kind of, you know, be like the stern, nice guy. And let's see if that works.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
You know, nice. Time. So,
So you found your way to connect, your own personal way to connect with.
Yes. I learned from two other successful people, but I said, well, Why don't we just tweak that a little bit?
Nice. So. Nice.
If you were going to give somebody coming up, another 22-year-old advice about being a loan officer, what would you say?
You have to have the business owner spirit. If you're not self-driven in any of these positions, right? Real estate agent, mortgage lender, even a lawyer, right? Just because you became a lawyer doesn't mean all of a sudden, like, you're a great lawyer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You just passed the bar, right? And I'm not saying that's hard or easy, okay?
Right.
So I'm not saying either that, but you have to be willing to learn and build your business. But also, nowadays, it seems like the information component is what is winning. So, you know, 22-year-old me, you have to say, you got to be all in. You can't be like, in for the commission or trying to make some money or being like, you know, the dealer, you know, making all this stuff. You have to be there to be a provider of economic advice, integrity for the long haul. You don't want to just do this one transaction. You want to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do their next 20 transactions.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where the business has, you know, changed. But yeah, a 22-year-old might be like, what are you even talking about?
Right.
I just want to make money. So but it is a great industry.
Yeah.
For sure.
So how has it changed a bit? I mean, from when you got started, is it harder? Is it easier? It just change?
The market crashing of 2009, in my opinion, was a cleansing of the industry, like how a lot of recessions and pullbacks are. It kind of gets out the garbage. It gets out the junk of the industry. And so before then, it was actually a lot harder to even try to get a deal or like have real estate agents talking to you, divorce attorneys, you know, insurance agents, whatever it may be, because they're always like, I got it. I already have someone.
Yeah.
Fats, like there was police officers, cab drivers. They were all mortgage lenders. I mean, you would get in a cab and the guy would be talking to me. He's like, oh, if you need a loan. I'm like, I just got in this industry, you know, like, because no one did Uber back then. Right. You hopped in the cabs.
So then
you fast forward and it like cleanses it out. And in the mortgage industry did a 180.
Yeah.
Where anything you knew was done.
Mm.
And you had to relearn.
Yeah.
And that happened several times. And then most recently, it happened in COVID again. The guidelines changed again. So, right. Like, I jokingly say, you know, I've been in the industry like 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though it's been 19, it's all I've ever done. There always seems to be an industry reset.
Yeah. Mm.
And so that like, I love tough markets because the good survive and the people who are going to complain and whine and say, man, I remember when, yeah, I do too, but it's not there. I remember the 50s, right? Like, the big old cars right now, they're all crazy now. Right. And so like, that's just where the world is. But yeah, it's been, if you're not involved in the information and the guidelines, it's really hard to do to take care of every client now.
And you mean like learning the information and what goes into sort of underwriting loans and just being on top of the industry as a whole?
Absolutely. Like, why is there inflation? Why are interest rates higher? You can't just say rates are higher.
Right.
People know rates are higher.
Right.
How did we get there? And right. So if you can explain that, it doesn't become about, well, that person across the street has $100 lower in fees. That's gone.
Right.
The same way, like, if you're having furniture delivered to your house, I don't care if the delivery fee is $100 or $200. Who's going to show up on time, not beat up my walls, and deliver the furniture in the same condition that I bought it in?
Right.
That's what's important. Not, well, you know, that place can deliver it for $50 cheaper.
Right, you know,
that's kind of, I think, where like the real estate world has now gone.
Yeah.
And mortgage world and a lot of worlds are moving towards. It's service, not.
Are you seeing sort of a contraction after last year with transaction volumes being down a bit?
I would say that the deals now and the transactions going on now, the perfect credit, great down payment deals, those are very few and far between. Mm-hmm. Now it's people coming out of a pandemic. You know what? They paid some bills late. Mm-hmm. You know, because they didn't change their spending habits now, they might have spent all of their savings, so they don't have a large down payment anymore. Mm-hmm. How do I take their situation and get them in the lending box? Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're just in the corner. I just got to get you in there to get right. you a loan.
Right.
And so that's where knowing of the programs has really kind of changed.
Right.
You have to.
Yeah. So thank you for all of that. Really good information, which is what I expected when I invited you on. What about some stories where a client of yours maybe learned a lesson in the process of getting their loan pushed through? And I guess like maybe, and so like this is an education bit, right, for our prospective buyers out there where somebody went through something that, you know, surprised them and surprised you. So a listener can learn from that experience without having to go through it themselves.
Yes. So there are two stories that I always tell when I'm asked because they are forever. And I do like 200 loans a year. So like, just know that these two stories out of all the 19 years stay with me the most. So the first story is, I call it the furniture story. A lot of furniture here.
We started
with furniture. And so the story is, it's a husband and wife and they had 4 kids buying the first place. So excited. So you do the whole loan stuff, you know, you get their income documents, you make sure they're good. They go put an offer on a place. They win the bid. Everything's great. Fast forward, we get what's called the clear to close, which just means your loan's done. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're closing in a couple days. Everything's done. We're going to get all the final numbers together. They're so excited. It's Memorial weekend. I get a call on Tuesday. There's a final, let's call it a soft credit check. Make sure no new debt shows up. Mm-hmm. And my processor says, hey, Josh, for that loan that's closing tomorrow, there's a new $350, let's say it was $350, maybe it's a little more, loan from Darwin Furniture. I'm like, okay, that's a problem. We were barely qualifying as it is. So I called them up and I was like, hey, did you go and get a furniture loan out? And they said, yeah, you know, it's Memorial Weekend. You get the Memorial Weekend sale. Yeah. We wanted to buy all the furniture. We could get 10% off. I said, well, we got two options. You return the furniture or you're going to have nice furniture and no home.
Oh, yeah.
So they returned the furniture.
Right.
And so I'm assuming after closing, they went and repurchased it under some agreement. But we couldn't meet closing because we had to get the furniture back, prove that the note was canceled. And so the moral of that story I always tell people is that just during the loan process, no new debt.
Yeah, yeah.
Only if it's an absolute must, like I'm driving down 294, which Laura, your wife, was, and she was driving my wife's car, and the engine blew out. And we get a call. And she's at 294. I don't know why she took Michelle. It was a very old car, by the way.
Only from the 50s?
It was probably like a 1995 Mitsubishi Lancer.
Okay.
Perfect.
You know?
Perfect.
If you talk to Laura, she's going to remember that
story. Yeah, of course.
And the engine blew out. So like, if that happens and it's absolute must and there's no other way, talk to your lender and just say, hey, I have to do this. But if you're like at Kohl's and you want to save your 10% on your, get your Kohl's cash, you might have to just wait to open that Kohl's credit card till afterwards. So no new debt.
What's the process on the back end for you when it is a must, you know, the engine blows and they have to spend some money?
Yeah.
What do you do?
So I always preface them with, guys, we're going to need a bunch of paperwork because odds are that debt might not show up exactly how it's supposed to look with your payment and everything on your credit report. And a lot of times we don't want to pull a brand new credit report because if the score changes, all of a sudden the whole loan changes.
Yeah.
And that's how things happen in the 11th hour. So like if you have to do it, keep a copy of your paperwork, what your note is, how much the payment is, because we're going to need all that if it's a must. And there's been people who are like, well, I had to open up the credit card. Okay, well, did you get the credit card agreement? No, it's online. Okay, well, you got to go find it. We got to calculate what it is. What did you charge? There might not be a payment yet. I have to auto-calculate that. Then we have to verify it.
Yeah.
So there's all this extra paperwork that saving your lender headache, saving you the headache, just only if it's an absolute must.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only if it's
I would say that the average person probably really doesn't know that. I mean, unless they're specifically told. Mm-hmm.
It's because you do your day-to-day life.
Yeah, right? Loans, like,
Yeah, you're like, okay, I'm done with my loan or I'm getting a loan. I'm, qualified. Well, I was always planning to go trade my, leased car in for another leased car. Well, your lease payment now went up $500, right? Those are the hardest things. It's really hard to return leased cars. So like,
don't do that.
Whenever I see someone has a lease, I'm like, oh my God. Because you just can't ever get away from it.
Even with a note from your lender?
Well, you can, but there's like, let's say if you had $8,000 left on a car and you had a car payment of $500 and you needed that $500 gone, you could, in theory, pay off that car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you have a lease, you can't pay off a lease. Right.
Really? I've never leased a car. Because, I don't know how it works.
Because if you lease a car, if you're just prepaying your lease, but when that lease is up, you don't own the car. You have to release another car to drive.
Right.
So like when people are like, oh, I'll just pay off the lease. I'm like, no, you're actually just prepaying the lease. It's like if you rent an apartment, I just prepaid for 5 months.
Right.
When that 5 months is up, you're still going to have rent. Same thing. And so that's why like leasing is really tough in the lending world. And so it's, but if you own a car or you're almost own the car, then it's a little bit easier.
Interesting. Okay.
What's the second story?
Second story was 2010. And this was they were buying a foreclosure, great deal. It was in Naperville. So I didn't know this. Apparently the real estate agents in this, they got in a heated fight because one of the real estate agents wanted the home for themselves. Let's say the home was like 240. The appraised value came back at like 410.
Okay.
My client ended up getting it and I was doing the loan for it. Well, the day before closing, they're trying to do the final walkthrough and they can't get into the property because the listing agent who was trying to buy this foreclosure for themselves took all of the lockbox keys.
Oh my gosh.
So the buyer, I don't even know why I did this, but the buyer was like, hey, Josh, I'm on my way to closing. Do you think you can go by the house? I remember the side garage door was opened. And I was like, okay, well, what am I? He's like, just, you know, tell me the inside looks okay. And I was like, ah, this isn't my world. Like, right. I'm a mortgage person.
Right.
I was like, but I will do this for you. So I go there and, you know, cell phones are relatively new. It's 2010. And he didn't have a cell phone. So I called up the closing and I said, hey, I'm not going to say his name because it's a very unique name. Did you have a pool in your house? And he's like, no. And I'm like, I'm not kidding. The water upstairs is running. There's water running down the stairs. And I opened, like, as soon as you walked into the house, I smelled water, you know, like dampness.
Yeah.
I have never seen in this house, the basement was 2,700 square feet. Picture 4 feet. And I know this because, and I'll explain why, 4 feet of ice cold water.
Oh my gosh.
Through the whole basement.
Oh,
wow.
Just imagine what that looks like. So yeah. Like you're talking all the electrical, right. All the HVAC, the water tank, you name it. And so he was like, I'm going to call a plumber because obviously we didn't have FaceTime back then. Like mm-hmm. what, like whatever we did, it didn't exist. So he called the plumber. I don't know why this. I waited in the water with plumber. I didn't. Now, looking back, I was like, what if there was live electrical?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We would be having a very different guest today.
But the water was so cold. He still went through with the purchase because he got such a great deal on the place because it appraised so much higher. So the moral of this story is don't get in a fight with the listing agent.
Did she or he or they sabotage it?
Yes. What they believe is 2 days because it was probably 2 days. Before the final walkthrough, he did like the wet bandits from Home Alone and put rags in the upstairs master bath and their hallway bath and then turned on the water, took the lockbox keys and left.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's terrible.
And so those are the two stories I always say, like, hey, just in the transaction, always treat everyone with respect.
Yeah.
You know, this is the home you want to buy. You don't want someone like putting a old fish thing in the vents and stuff.
like
treat everyone with respect uh-huh. with that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, wow. Like, so like that, that's kind of, oh, you know, I'm so upset with the seller. Don't say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you make them mad, they might do something.
Yeah.
Vice versa. Most people are respectful.
Yeah. Most people don't take it to that extent.
So yeah.
And also do a walkthrough.
Do a walkthrough.
Before the close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't send your mortgage guy on a
well, I mean, thank God they did.
Yes.
I guess it didn't matter. He was still going to close anyways.
But like he felt something was off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and it, that's why I was like, why are you asking me to go there? But he apparently knew something happened.
Yeah.
He felt it.
Yeah. Trust your gut.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what recommendations do you have for like first time home buyers when they're trying to get started?
I used to tell them, you know, save as much money as you can, right? Mm-hmm. But nowadays, down payment has become one of the least important factors in buying a home. Mm-hmm. They have, it, you know, used to be the only 100% financing loan out there was a VA loan mm-hmm. if you were a veteran. Now you have normal people 100% financing mm-hmm. loans. You have 1% down.
Really?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the best advice I could give someone is pay your bills on time, mm-hmm. take care of your, you know, credit, mm-hmm. and get used to paying a higher payment than what your rent is actually going to be.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because, you know, it's the old saying was rent, you know, like own for what you pay rent. Yeah, if you were renting for, you know, $2,500, but if your rent's $1,000,
right,
unless you're buying a $50,000 condo somewhere,
right,
you got to get used to paying that higher rent.
Right.
But pay your bills on time, take care of your credit, and for your like work as much as you can. If your job's offering you overtime,
right,
take it.
Right.
Do that. Mm-hmm.
You know? Same sort of advice or different advice when you're, you know, just getting into real estate investing?
So real estate investing, I love real estate investors. I own a handful of buildings. And so from, you know, commercial to residential, when it comes to that, down payment becomes key. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, there's programs out there where you could buy low down payment for 4 units and under, mm-hmm. but when you get into the 5 unit and above world, you really need the 20, 25, 30% mm-hmm. down payments. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, is be diligent about saving your money mm-hmm. because yeah, I mean, owning a 12 unit building, owning a 20 unit building, that's where you can really do well for that cash flow mm-hmm. for the future, but mm-hmm. it's harder to buy them, which is why you don't see them sell as much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, for, you know, commercial investors, you have to save money because the down payment's going to be king.
Gotcha.
On that one.
How'd you get into the real estate investing world?
My first piece of real estate that I owned was a 6-flat commercial building in Brookfield. I still own it to this day.
Nice.
Residential apartments. 6 units. It was back in the day when before the market crashed. Mm-hmm. I was actually still in college.
Wow.
I was a fifth year college
student. Are you saying that this is the when you could get a loan with the signature? Is that what you're saying?
I might be saying that. Uh-huh. I might be saying that. Where you could do a 5% down commercial loan.
Well, good for you for still hanging on to it.
And got yeah. And I was kind of just learning as I was going. And then, you know, the market crashed a little bit, but then interest rates came down. I refinanced mm-hmm. into a normal loan. Mm-hmm. I took a building that at the time was getting maybe $3,500 a month rent. And over a 5-year period, I was able to get it up to about $5,500. Mm-hmm. And now it's about as high as it's going to be, maybe like $6,200, $6,300. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in 7 years now, it's finally paid off. So but that was a different time. But that was my first place. And then my parents, when I graduated college, they gave me like 2 months at home. They're like, you own a 6-flat and you live in a 10x10 bedroom with your parents. You're out.
Get out of here. You know what you're doing.
So I had to, by then I was working. So,
yeah.
You know, then I had to buy my house, which, you know, I bought in 2005, which real estate was only going to go one way from there. There wasn't a crash going to happen.
Real estate is going to go up and up.
And I still own that house to this day that I do rent out as well.
Good. Good. Any fun stories? Is there a landlord story?
Yeah, I do. The one that comes to mind, just call him Mr. Ray. Mm-hmm. It was November 15th. I'll never forget the day. It was a 8-flat that I recently acquired in 2008.
Okay.
And I owned a building for maybe 2 or 3 months at that time. And so I get a call on a Thursday, and it was one of the tenants who said, hey, you know, apartment unit, I think it was 4. Apartment unit 4, the TV is really, really loud. I'm like, okay. So I call up Mr. A, hey, I talked to him. Can you just keep the, like, I don't like those calls. I just like, right. I like normal calls, mm-hmm. like plumbing,
right.
stuff like that. Right. Not like someone's being loud. I'm like, oh my God, what'd I get into? And then I get a call the next day. Hey, the TV's loud. I'm like, I call up Mr. A, he doesn't answer. And I'm like, well, I called them. I left a message. Fast forward a couple days later, it's November 15th. All that happened before, it's November 15th. And I get a call from the same tenant. Hey, like the TV's been blaring all weekend. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. So I go over there. I'm banging on the door, like super upset, right? Like I'm just, you know, I just want to relax.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's in the evening. And I open up the door and he smoked. It's okay. I walk in there. I'm like, Ray, you in here, Mr. Ray? I don't even know if that was his real name, but sure, that's what I said in my mind it was. Because I inherited all these right. tenants. Right. So I, you know, haven't done anything. Smoked, you know. So I'm walking, I walk into the kitchen, I look out of the corner of my eye, and Mr. Ray is dead, wedged between the couch and his coffee table.
Oh, yikes.
Mr. Ray, and again, his name is not Mr. Ray, but right. that's yeah. what I call right. him. He was in his birthday suit.
Oh. With the TV blaring.
The TV blaring. Oh. And so from when I first talked to him to that time, he had a heart attack. So I call up 911.
Yikes.
And I'm like, you know, I tell them, I say, hey, I found a deceased person. And they were like, super like, how do you know he's deceased? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm not a doctor. But his feet are blue. And certain things happen when you pass and body parts just let go. Uh-huh. And I said, so, and they're like, well, can you feel for a pulse? I'm like, he's no longer with us, but I understand that a coroner has to make that determination, as right. I am not one either.
Right.
So the police come, and as soon as they walk in, they're like, oh, yeah. And so as I'm sitting in the hallway and all this is going on, all the tenants are coming out. And I was like, oh, you know, he passed, but you know, and so, it was, and then you see the body bag and you see all this stuff and you're like, what did I get myself into yeah. with this
yeah.
building?
Yeah.
Fast forward, I turned that building into a condo conversion and made, after doing everything, risking everything.
Yeah.
Like, $42,000.
Oh, no.
I sold my last unit in 2008 and then like kind of everything fell apart.
Oh, well,
but good. I priced them really because I felt there was bad vibes with
good
that building.
For you.
So yeah. I didn't want to own it anymore. So yeah. I was like, I'm going to convert this to condos.
Again, trusting your gut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Great. I kind of wish I still owned that building. It was a good building. But at the time, I just felt it was... There was a cloud.
Too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a when you find someone passed, and then it was just like you just I just couldn't recover from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. While the police and the coroners were there, did somebody ask you to change a light bulb or something like that? Hey, since you're here,
thankfully not. But when they brought Mr. Ray out and he was in one position and they had to get him flat. Uh-huh. And I never saw that before. And yeah. you see like grown men, like,
oh,
straightening legs out. Uh-huh. And I'm like,
oof, oof.
Oh, I've never seen that either.
Because we're not used to seeing that. Yeah. When we see someone who has passed, it's in a nice presentation.
Yeah.
Right. You don't see anything. And so at the time I was, I don't know, 24, and I'm seeing this. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh,
you'll never unsee that.
Yeah, it's like 24, 25, and I learned, and I did learn a lot with that building, though. But, you know, Mr. Ray, whoever he was, I didn't have any documentation because landlords never really kept any records before that. They're right. like, this is so-and-so. I just call him Mr. Ray.
Because
that was what he was. But I'm pretty sure that wasn't his name. Right. I think it was like Bill or something. I everyone called him Ray. That was just like street name or something. I don't know.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good story. We, we manage properties. We had a
yeah. What do you guys got?
There was one time where a tenant of ours had been dead for a long time to the point where, he bloated and ruptured.
Oh, Lord.
And that's when we found out. And this was our previous property manager's last day.
Yeah.
I think I got the call.
Congratulations.
you know, and I do feel bad for this, but it was a weekend, and you know, I was younger then, and probably had went out with Laura, my wife, and so I did not hear the phone ring at 2 a.m. Okay. Unfortunately, Lauren, our good friend Lo, who was a property manager for the time, did hear the phone ring, and had to go to the unit at 2 a.m. to, I guess, identify the body, but like similar to you,
yeah.
It was a. You know, you don't know all of your tenants, but yeah, he quit the next day.
Yeah. I think we're still dealing with structural issues that happened from the leakage.
Yeah, there we could be. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It is because you have to think about it. You have the carpet, the, you know, pad underneath, the flooring.
Yeah, this was a joist issue that it deteriorated the structural joist underneath the flooring.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to move out all the tenants below.
Wow, yeah. This was a rupture.
It was something.
Yeah, so that those similar stories.
Property management, super fun.
Yeah. And on that note,
let's take a break.
Why don't we take a break? Hello, hello, hello.
Testing. You've got good tone, man. You got a good ear.
Thanks. There was a. I don't know why. I mean, I guess my sister just thought I didn't have any tone. And so one time we were both working downtown. Anyway, there was a famous scene. It's not a movie, but it's in our minds where we were driving downtown and she was convinced that I wouldn't be able to, but she was like putting out tones and I was matching her pitch. She was floored.
You grew up together, and she had never heard you sing. Were you?
Well, I wrote that newsletter recently where she just like kind of threw out there one time that she thought I did have a good voice, and that's when I became convinced that I did, even though she like had no basis for throwing out that comment. So no, I didn't. I was not this you know singer. She was the singer.
Yeah, I feel like that happens a lot in families, siblings. Mm-hmm. You know, one person's known for something and then the other person kind of shrinks back because, I don't know, for whatever reason, they think that they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true.
Yeah, I wish, nobody's fault, but I wish my musical potential had been nurtured more, but I didn't really demonstrate any. But there was this one time in like seventh grade music class where we were meant to, you know, compose a song using the components of a Casio keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a good one. My teacher was blown away.
Interesting. But you never took it past that.
Never took it past that. I was not very good at trumpet.
We also got into sports.
I was big into sports. Yeah. I mean, baseball was my one true love at that time for most of my life.
There's not a lot of coolness, a cool factor when you're that young, at least for me, you know, being in band and orchestra, you know, it was kind of a geeky thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it probably would have served me better though. I probably should have been a little bit more geeky, less concerned about my coolness factor.
Yeah. Everyone probably could have done that.
Really wasn't that cool when it came down to it.
No. Well, you're cool now.
Yeah, look at me now.
And I will just put it out there. It is never too late to learn music.
Yeah. No, I took piano lessons for like a hot second. It was really rewarding. Maybe I'll do it again, but I don't have that much time.
Maybe you and Axel could take piano lessons together. That's or some guitar lessons or something.
Yeah.
Because he shows
he's very interested. Yeah.
He's a little rock star in the making.
Just his poses. He like takes his little ukulele, which he calls his guitar, and just like leans into it, like rocking, like I mean, or he'll get up on the little table and say, "Yeah, I'm on stage." And then I took a video. Lennon was up there watching him sing Wheels on the Bus. But so
the biggest fan.
His biggest fan for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he was, I don't know, 1.5 years old, and he knew how to hold and kind of strum and mock a guitar with the correct fingering.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of incredible.
Yeah. And I've taught him over the years this, you know, in quotes, big finish, which, you know, before he didn't really get, but now he totally gets and goes, big finish. Bye. this, and he strums harder, and like it's amazing.
So good.
Show you a video. Okay. Do you have a record of the week?
I do.
Okay.
It's not a really record of the week. It's an artist that is very well known to some people. I never heard of him. It was actually probably mentioned many times on this podcast, and I just kind of wrote it down.
Have you guys heard of Elvis?
I know. He's good. He's old, though. Probably very similar. This guy is Wes Montgomery.
Sure.
Okay. I bring him up today because he was born in Indianapolis. You guys were talking about Indiana going to school. So, you know, a little tie back. I have been learning, struggling to learn some jazz on piano.
Okay.
And I don't know, just stumbled upon him and love it.
Is that what we were listening to before?
Right before today? I press record?
No.
No, that was just a random piano instrumental.
Okay.
Pop.
Whatever. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I know Wes Montgomery is somebody that covers a lot of pop. Is that?
He does. One of the top songs on Spotify that he did is a cover of Tequila.
Huh.
Yeah. I always think of Pee-wee Herman when I think of that song.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a huge fan of that. It's just like when jazz people, they love to do a jazz version of Raindrops on Roses. Like, no, just don't ever cover. If you're a jazz person out there, don't cover that song again. It's done. it's a wonderful song, but it belonged in the movie and then it's done.
Right.
I don't know, whatever. But anyway, it's for somebody who doesn't really love jazz. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice entryway because it's got a lot of rhythm. Just it's almost danceable, and he's a guitar player, jazz guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But he, it's not noodly, masturbatory jazz. Mm-hmm. It's actually fun jazz. Mm-hmm. So that's my record of the week.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love it. Thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh well, we're back with Josh Jones.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Wonderful.
So if I put you on the spot, what new music are you listening to these days, if any?
New music when I'm not listening to the 90s music, which I would consider the most newest music that I like.
It's 30 years old.
I know. I mean, the late 90s with BSB and NSYNC and O-Town and LFO and all those bands. And then you have Blink 182 was midnight. I mean, you had the Sum 41. Yeah. Those were the great, you know, a lot of great music. But today, I feel like I liked old Taylor Swift. I don't like new Taylor Swift.
Uh-huh.
There's not a lot of music where I'm like, this is real good stuff. Some of the hip hop artists I like, but I try to stay off the regular radio because every hour it's the same six songs and they're just okay.
I know your wife went to Taylor Swift and Madonna. Do you have to go with her or?
No, so when it comes to concerts, I get a little upset with concerts. Uh-huh. If the concert starts at 8, why aren't they starting at 8?
Yeah, I agree.
I have to work the
next day. Want to get on that class action lawsuit from New Yorkers that sued Madonna for starting late?
Is that right? Oh, yeah. That was pretty late, though. When I think started an hour late.
Even later.
Oh, wow.
When I went to Jay-Z and Kanye when they came here, you know, 10 years ago, they didn't come on till like 11. I fell asleep in the seats.
Yeah.
And there's pictures of me because I was like, well, it's very disrespectful that they're late. The only recent concert that I've been to was Blink 182, which I really, really like that one. Yeah. But the kind of pop ones, it's, you know, I'm going to be that old guy.
Yeah.
I also don't want a 30-minute encore. Come out and play a song, a last final song, and then wrap it up.
Let's go.
Hate standing there like, you know, like a silly monkey clapping my hands, knowing that they're back there smoking pot, taking their time, and then they got a whole nother set. And I'm ready for bed.
Wow.
Yeah, there's today's music is just, it's just a different vibe. I did like a lot of the techno stuff. I like that. But if you're noticing, like, some of the music is they're redoing, you know, Diddy's song, who redid a song already.
Right.
It's redone.
Right.
And if you go back, it's like done from Otis, you know, Redding, right? Like Otis Redding or Sam Cooke originally did it.
Right.
Or like Elvis.
Right.
It's meta.
Yes, right?
Goes back to the 50s.
Yeah. All right. So we'll stick with the 50s and the 90s. You have old records. Is there a Riverside, you know, or thereabouts record shop that you like?
There are some local ones. There's one in Brookfield that I like. There's one in Maywood that I like as well. And so if I'm just literally driving down an area and I see something, I will just stop in and see if there's anything cool.
Nice.
There's just something about an old record. When you open it, it smells a little different. Uh-huh. It smells old. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And to think like this music was burned into that vinyl, printed on that vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, and you're listening to how it was supposed to be listened to. It was pretty cool.
Well, you know, other people have listened to it.
Yeah.
You put stories around it. It's fun.
It went through a lot.
Speaking of Riverside, you grew up in Riverside?
I was born in Berwyn, moved to Riverside when I was 4, and then was in Riverside until I was 21, till I was told to leave because I owned a 6 flat. Oh, no, 22. Uh-huh. And then I went to Brookfield for 14 years. Uh-huh. And then Riverside sucked me back in.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Riverside is one of those towns. It's kind of, you know, a diamond in between a whole bunch of other towns. Like, the roads are curvy. It's a Frederick Law Olmsted town. And before GPS, if you didn't know, you would just, you know, go around Harlem or Ogden, or you'd go around Riverside, and no one knows the real story, but supposedly all the curved roads was to keep outsiders out.
Interesting.
And so, and, you know, Riverside to this day doesn't have a lot of business within the town because it doesn't get a lot of traffic from outside. So it's got like 2 restaurants you can eat at.
Huh.
It's got beautiful river and you can go along the riverside. It's got a great library and a really cool water tower, which is the staple of Riverside. And then
why is it cool?
It's the water tower is like over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been in a handful of movies. The most notable movie and the train station was The Lake House with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
Okay.
And so if you look at that, the main house that Keanu Reeves lived in is in Riverside, and then the water tower as well as the train station is also in Riverside too.
Cool.
So it's a cool little piece, and the town hasn't changed much of how it has looked. The water tower and the library and a couple of the main buildings have been the same. I mean, if you look at pictures from, you know, the early 1900s, it's the same.
Amazing.
Really cool. Everything else has changed around there.
Nice. Great place to raise a family.
School, yeah. Schools are really good. Community is good. A lot of summer events, art fests, food events. So, and then we live close to the center of town. So we just take the 2 little boys in there and just hop, you know, toss them in the wagon. We go to center town, which is nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then the, a lot of good restaurants and stuff like that around Riverside. I mean, you got also got Brookfield Zoo nearby.
Yes, yes. I mean, Brookfield, I love Brookfield. Michelle and I were there for 14 years. Tons of good restaurants. You have the zoo. You have pubs. I love that area. Like Berwyn, amazing restaurants.
Totally.
LaGrange Park, amazing restaurants over there. So it's really changed. Like, and you get a lot of city transplants now coming into the burbs over there.
Well, it's so close. I mean, it's so close to the city. So if you still need to get down to the city, you know, which has also changed. But
hop on 55 or 290 and you're there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thank you. Really fun to
talk
to you.
Andy, thank you. Karen, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, good to have you. Andrew.
Yes, Karen.
Why big finishes?
That's an interesting question for the ending segments of our podcast.
Let's finish big, Andy.
Well, I mean, I think it helps the audience understand that this is the end.
Okay.
It also kind of leaves them with something a little bit more elevated than the normal course of the concerts, or, you know, the song, or whatever you're finishing big.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's, you know, it's nice to go out with a bang.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a show that has not done that, like almost to the complete opposite, where they just end real quietly?
You know, I mean, I'm going to get a little fishy here. Forgive me.
I smell it.
But I mean, you know, certainly when you're a Fish fan, the choice of song and the encore can either leave you fulfilled or leave you with something to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's their intention to finish small. They just, you know, they just play what they want to play, and sometimes it doesn't hit you personally for that particular concert correctly. But other times, you know, I mean, you might be sitting next to a stranger that loves it. So,
mm-hmm.
But I, you know, conversely, I think just sort of fading out and walking off stage is also kind of nice.
Yeah. I kind of like that, depending on, because sometimes if I'm so amped after a show, and like mm-hmm. we were talking before, sometimes shows can go on forever. Mm-hmm. And then you're coming home at, you know, 1 a.m. and you're buzzing mm-hmm. and you don't get to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely get that. I'm with you. Like, I mean, you know, I don't need a 4-song encore. I'm ready to be done and sort of file this experience away. Like, okay, check that box. I've done that.
Yep.
I like it in plays when, you know, sort of the stage lights just go black.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of fade away. I mean, it's a satisfying end usually.
Yeah.
It's a weighty play.
Yep. Leaves you with your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Does that answer your question? I mean, we were talking about my son and how I taught him a big finish. And I just think it's cute when he does a big finish.
Yeah.
And I also, I don't know why, I don't know why I taught him. I guess I was just like trying to teach him some theatrics.
I love it. He's naturally a frontman, rock star.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
probably will serve him well. Or
I hope someday in the back room, in the green room, he's got all the ladies around, and thinking he's the shit.
Yeah,
and be like, yeah, my dad taught me that. Your endings are so big.
Yeah. I mean, I think depending on the context, I'll take some pride in that.
Yeah, do it.
I could also think where that, like, it just gets him into trouble just because it gets old. Like, could you just tone it down just a little bit? Like,
teach him how to do the other thing, quiet ending.
Yeah, yeah. Just
go out with a whisper.
Read the room, maybe.
He
needs to read the room a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
You know who also needs to read your room?
Who?
Your dog. Pearl. She definitely needs to read the room.
She does.
She's always doing a big ending.
She's always, yeah. Well, she doesn't want anything to end. She wants to be petted and petted and petted and won't take no for an answer.
Well, they're both adorable, so
yeah.
Good job.
Thanks. Well, that's why big finishes.
Okay. And
how about we do a big finish? What should we say? Should we you know who does big finishes well?
Who?
Smartless.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which we can't
do. We can't steal that.
Then we'll get sued or something. But good for them they just signed a big, big new deal.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. If you haven't checked out Smartless, it's also a really fun podcast. Really
fun podcast. I actually wanted to mention a podcast that we like.
Great.
There's another podcast that our friend Jason Taylor turned us onto. It's the Rock and Roll in 500 Songs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A good podcast.
I listened to, I think it was the episode with the Monkees.
Mm, nice.
Yeah.
You didn't go in order?
No.
You just picked a random?
Of course, because I wanted to go with something I cared about. Mm-hmm. A song that I knew, or like a band that I knew really well, or that I was just intrigued about.
Okay. Well, there's some podcasts you should check out. And how about this big finish? We haven't really asked this of our listeners before, but if you enjoyed this episode, mm-hmm. smash that like button on Spotify.
Bye. Bye.
This has been an episode of Records and Real Estate. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Today's episode was brought to you by Be Realty. Be where you want to be. Be Realty.